Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us for the NCC podcast. God is doing so many great things in our community, and I trust that He's doing great things in your life as well. And I trust that God is going to speak to you through this message.
Hey, 2022, we said this is our year to advance. And we've put some definitions around that. We said if we're going to advance, this is what it means. It means to move forward in a purposeful way. It means to make progress. And we said, okay, if we're going to advance, there's got to be a stance that we get in if we want to advance this year. And we know that our stance is our mental and emotional position that we have adopted, meaning that we have chosen to make that our own. Whatever mental stance you are in today, it's the stance that you have chosen. Whatever emotional stance you are in today, it is what you have chosen, that mental and emotional position. Other people might have influenced it, but ultimately you are the one that has adopted it because nobody can force you to adopt a position in your life. You have to choose to do that. So if we say, okay, so I want to advance and there's this thing called a stance, a mental and emotional position. Well, what is the stance that's really going to help me to advance into what is possible this year, into everything that God has for me this year? And so we said that our stance to advance is defined as this. It is the positive attitude and the hopeful outlook we daily choose. The positive attitude means the way that we are going to approach this day is going to be with a positive, faith-filled mindset. But then there also has to be this hopeful outlook as I look into tomorrow. I can't look into the future with doom and gloom. I can't look into the future with things saying, oh, there's no way it's going to work out for me. I've got to have a hopeful outlook into the future, and I've got to have the positive attitude, the hopeful outlook, and I have to make that choice every single day if I really want to make progress or to move forward in a purposeful way. And in our series, we kind of started this year in January. If you weren't here, I encourage you to go back and listen to it. But we said, okay, the two things that are going to be the foundation to make that happen is excellence and resilience. And just the same way an athlete is going to get in a great stance out on the field tonight, it's going to start with the base, with their foundation. And so we said for us, if we're going to get in this great stance and we're going to live with this positive attitude, we're going to live with this hopeful outlook, we're going to make that choice every day, well, then we've got to make sure that we are living with excellence. Excellence is how well you do something, and resilience, how well you respond to something. It is with excellence and resilience that we have decided we are going to live this year. And so we said, okay, here's a little thing that you can kind of take with you, and that is this, that we are going to pursue excellence and practice resilience. We are pursuing excellence, okay? We are pursuing the very best, doing our best to bring the best out of us. That's what our pursuit is. And then we're going to have to practice resilience if we want to make that possible. Because it's not just going to happen overnight. It's not just going to be easy. No, it's going to take resilience if we want to discover everything that God has said was possible. I love what the Apostle Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. He says, run to win. Run to win. He said, the same way that runners run in a race, this is the way you should approach your life. You should run to win. A few verses later, he says, so I run with purpose in every step. Run to win. He says, so I run with purpose in every step. I run with purpose in every choice. I run with purpose in every day. You see, what does that sound like? That sounds like pursuing excellence. I'm going to run to win. I'm going to do everything I can to be my best for God. I want to live that way. But not only do I want to pursue excellence, he says, I'm going to run with purpose in every step, meaning sometimes you're going to trip and fall, but you've got to get back up again and put purpose back into your life. You cannot just stay down and stay defeated. So he says, I want to run to win. And if I really want to win in life, I've got to make sure that there is purpose and intention in every single step. And you know, athletics has taught me a lot personally about these two things, excellence and resilience. And for those of you that know my background, I grew up playing sports. I had the opportunity to play in college, and then I've coached for years, multiple state championship teams, and that's my background. As a matter of fact, there was a new family that I was talking to out in the lobby just a few weeks ago. When I started talking to them about my background, they were a new family in the church, started telling them about my background and that I was a coach. And he just looks at me and starts nodding his head and he goes, ah, now it all makes sense. I had somebody tell me years ago, they say, you know, whenever we come to church, this place feels way more like a locker room than it does a church. And I'm like, I'm winning. Yes, that's exactly right. So let me share with you today four things that football taught me that everybody needs to know. Four things football taught me that everybody needs to know. Number one is this, is that vision is vital. Vision is vital. You know, playing quarterback, so much goes into playing quarterback. It's not just, you know, somebody who just throws the ball and how strong their arm is. So much goes into playing that position. And so when a quarterback takes the snap from center, the first thing that they are looking at is that they are looking at the defense, what the defense is doing, where the defensive backs are moving towards, any linebacker pressures. Their eyes are on the defense. As they go back, their eyes are on the defense, and the position of the defense is going to tell them where they need to throw the ball, who is going to be the open receiver. And so as they're looking at the defense, briefly just for a moment, their eyes are going to come off the defense and onto their intended target just to make sure that he is actually where he is supposed to be. In that moment, the quarterback is going to try to adjust to find the clearest throwing lane possible. And then in that moment, he is going to let the ball go. But here's the thing, is that it doesn't always happen that way. Now, that is the best case scenario. But a lot of times playing quarterback, you get back, you find the defense, you look for your target, you look for your guy, you see him briefly, but then all of a sudden he gets lost. He gets lost because the people playing offensive line and defensive line, those are the biggest guys on the field. It's hard to see around people who weigh 330 pounds and are 6 foot, 5 inches tall. And when all of those guys are getting pushed back on you and they're really up close to you, sometimes you lose the receiver. And what we call this in football, you call this throwing blind. Because I saw the receiver for a moment, but then I don't see the receiver. And I cannot adjust to find him because the rush is too close to me, the linemen are too close to me. And so what I have to do in that moment is I have to throw the ball even though I don't know exactly where the receiver is. It's called throwing blind. What you have to do is see without seeing. You have to envision. You have to imagine. You have to visualize. You have to see without seeing. You have to see without seeing. Now, later in life, just a few years ago, I found that this is also a very good quality whenever you're shooting skeet, okay? I'm not an avid hunter, being that the story I'm telling you is the only time I've ever touched a real gun. And so I go to North Carolina to spend a few days with my mentor, my former pastor, whenever I was in college at the University of North Carolina. And when I went to see him, he said, "Hey, man, I've got some friends coming down from New York City. There are three or four doctors, and they're coming down to spend a little time with me as well. And your trip is going to kind of coordinate with their trip. So maybe on their last day and your first day, I'm planning to go on this bird hunt." And I said, "I'm so sorry, Pastor. I've never been hunting before." And he's like, "Neither have they. It'll be great." It's not what I was going for. So anyway, so we go out there. I'm with four doctors from New York City who have never been hunting. I have never been hunting either. And so the guy says, "Hey, I understand that you guys have never been hunting. So look, we're going to practice first. We're going to shoot some skeet." And I'm like, "Okay, well, this is good. At least I'll get some practice in before we go and try to kill a bird." And they throw these skeet. So I tell the guy I've never been hunting. The first four guys are from New York. So, right, he's making fun of them for, like, being city slickers, right? Like, "Oh, city slickers." So I come up, I say, "I've never shot a gun either." He's like, "Are you from New York?" And I said, "No, I'm from Louisiana." And then he just gave me the death stare. He said, "Son, your state's called the sportsman's paradise." I said, "Just load that skeet." So he throws the first skeet up there and bang, I shoot the first one. He throws the second one up there, bang, I shoot the second one. He says, "I thought you said you never shot a gun." I said, "I've never shot a gun before." He says, "Ah, beginner's luck." We were all taking two at a time. All the other doctors go, and man, they're missing, and maybe one will clip one every now and then. I get back up. They fire the next two. Bang, shoot the first one. Bang, shoot the second one. And he says, "You told me you had never shot a gun before." I said, "Sir, I have never shot a gun before." I said, "I'm not lying. I'm a preacher." He said, "Well, you wouldn't be the first preacher that lied." It's okay. So I come back up my third time, and two more go up, and I shoot both of them, bang, bang, I nail them both, and he just looks at me, stares at me. He says, "Are you a good golfer?" I said, "Well, yeah, I'm a pretty good golfer." He says, all good golfers are good shooters. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, why is that? He said, because you have great hand-eye coordination and you have super steady hands. And I was like, oh, okay, pretty cool. And so we go back and I shoot two more, boom, 7 and 8, boom, shoot both of those, 9 and 10, boom, boom. And he looks at me and he says, I've been doing this a long time. I have never in my life seen somebody who's never shoot a gun hit the first 10 in a row. I said, that's because you never met me. But then it really dawned on me, it wasn't just that I played golf. And, you know, after you say something like that, well, I got up for the 11th and what'd I do? I missed, right? You know, that's how it always works. But I hit the 12th, and that was the last one, so that's really all you need to know, 11 for 12. And then it dawned on me, my whole life I had been anticipating where people were going to be before they were there. My whole life I had been throwing to people running 20 miles an hour across the field 35 yards away and having to throw it to them and hit them exactly on stride. And I had done that so many times when I couldn't even see them. I'm like, how can you miss a skeet? Like, it's just going. It doesn't move. It's just like right there. It's like, bang. I mean, that's like the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. I've been doing this all my life to people who are moving, being tugged on and pulled on and pushed by other people, and you have to throw it in the exact right spot. And it's like I've lived my whole life seeing without seeing. I had done this so many times before, and you know what? I've discovered that life is so much like shooting skeet. Life is so much like football, is that you have to be able to see what's possible even when it's not clearly observable. You have to be able to see what's possible even when it's not clearly observable. You have to live seeing without seeing. The Bible says in Proverbs chapter 29, it says, where there is no prophetic vision, the people cast off restraint. But blessed is he who keeps the law. Where there is no vision, the Bible says, where there is no vision, it causes people to live with no self-control. They cast off all restraint. They live with no self-control. When there's no vision, people live with no self-control. Why? Because when you don't see right, you don't think right. And when you don't think right, you don't act right. But what about this other person that keeps the law? What about this other person that lives a different way? So many times it's because they see something different. And because what they see, it lets them think different, and therefore they act different. So therefore they keep the law instead of going against it and throwing off restraint. You see, God's word to us, the Bible, God has given us his word. Why? Because he wants us to see the possibility. He wants us to see the possibility that lies within his promises for you and for me. He wants us to see the possibility that lies within his supernatural power. He wants us to see what is possible. He wants us to have a vision, to be able to envision, to see even without being able to see. And you know what? I will leave you with this before we move on, and that is that you will only serve the God that you see. It doesn't matter who God actually is, because the God that you will end up serving is the God that you see. Now, here's the reality. You are never, probably in this life, going to see God face to face. So you are going to have to see him without seeing him. But the God that you serve, or we could even go one step further and say, the God that you will have in your life is the God that you see. So you need to see him for who he really is. Vision is vital. Vision is vital. Here's the second thing that football taught me that everybody needs to know, and that is that communication is critical. Communication is critical. You know that there is nothing worse than being a quarterback and taking the snap from center and turning around to hand the ball off to your running back only to realize that he went the wrong way. Now notice I said he went the wrong way because the quarterback is never wrong. There is no worse feeling than realizing I'm standing here, he's way over there, I turn around and there's just a bunch of mean people that want to rip my head off coming at me. That is the worst feeling in the world. And now what we call this is a miscommunication. And it literally means that. It means that the communication has missed. We missed. We communicated, but we missed. It is a miscommunication. And you know what miscommunication, it doesn't just happen on the field. Miscommunication happens in life. It happens in relationships. It happens in your marriage. But a miscommunication is okay if you fix communication. A miscommunication is okay if it is followed by a fix of communication. That's what happens. Whenever something goes wrong out on the field, the team gathers together on the sideline and the coaches come over and they're talking on the phones and the team is getting together. Why? Because what they are doing in that moment is they are evaluating, because what they know is a little evaluation is going to lead to an explanation. They start asking questions. Why did you go that way when we were supposed to? Oh, well, I thought you checked the play. Oh, no, remember, that check is not what we... Okay, and they start talking through it. And a little evaluation leads to an explanation. And then that explanation is going to lead to better execution when they get back on the field, so that that same mistake, that same miscommunication doesn't happen in the future because they fixed the communication. But what happens so many times in life is that we don't communicate about the miscommunication. We have a miscommunication with our spouse, we have a miscommunication with our employee, but we don't communicate about the miscommunication, and instead we only communicate with ourselves. And we start talking to ourselves and telling ourselves a whole different story. And it's not that they just went the wrong way, and it's not just that they ran the wrong route, they meant to do it. They didn't just say that and hurt my feelings. They meant to hurt my feelings. They didn't just not show up because they forgot about the appointment. They didn't show up because they don't care about me. They don't value me. They don't appreciate me. And we start telling, instead of just having a conversation to fix the communication, we start communicating with ourselves, and we start telling ourselves a different story. These people are not for me. These people are idiots. Nothing will ever change. We start telling ourselves a story, and this happens in friendships. It happens in marriages. It happens in the workplace. And it also happens in faith, because our communication isn't just critical with our earthly relationships. Our communication is critical when it comes to relationship with our Heavenly Father. Now, it's interesting that the disciples were always with Jesus, and they only asked Jesus to teach them one thing. They said, teach us how to pray. Teach us how to pray. They didn't ask, teach us how to do all these miracles. Teach us how to hold people's attention and captivate them with a great sermon. No, the only thing that the disciples recorded in the Gospels asked Jesus to do is teach us how to pray. Now, they would have known how to pray because they were Jewish and they would have grown up in the synagogue and their parents would have prayers and they would have recited prayers growing up. They knew how to pray, but what they were asking Jesus is, teach us how to pray like you pray, because you don't pray like we've always heard other people pray. And what they saw in Jesus was the connection that he had to the Father. It came through the communication that he had with the Father. So his connection with God came through his communication with God. And the disciples were smart enough to know and say, that's going to be critical for this assignment that Jesus is giving us to carry out on the earth. So Jesus does. Jesus teaches the disciples how to pray. He says, this is how you should pray in Matthew chapter 6. And he says, our Father in heaven. He addresses him. He says, he is your Father. He's not the almighty power that's trying to strike you down. He's not against you. You don't have to, you're not fighting against him. He's not fighting. He's a Father. He is a very, very good Father. And he is in heaven. He's your Father in heaven. He says, and then hallowed be your name. Holy is your name. Wonderful is your name. Magnificent is your name. Let your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. He's saying, look, he wants to bring what's in heaven down to here. He wants to bring his presence and his love and his will and his power. He wants to bring that into earth. So why don't you pray that what is in heaven you will experience here on this earth? He says, then give us our day. Give us today our daily bread. Give us what we need. Give us what we need physically. Give us what we need spiritually. Give us what we need mentally and emotionally. Give us that bread that we need to nourish and sustain us. And forgive us our debts. Forgive us of our sins, is what they're saying. God, forgive us of our sins, as we have also forgiven those who have sinned against us, as we've forgiven those who have a debt towards us, as we forgive those who wronged us, who betrayed us, as we forgive them, God, please forgive us and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Jesus was teaching them how to have this connection with the Father. You know, something supernatural happens when you begin to regularly talk to God. Not just bless my food, but here's my life. When you start to just regularly have conversations with God, the communication creates a connection. God, here is my life. Here is my struggle. Here is my situation. Here is my temptation. Here it is, God. Here is my life. See, if you're attempting to run the race of faith, and if you're attempting to win, then you have got to establish great communication with your Creator. Communication is critical. Communication is critical for you to win. Communication is critical. Don't worry, there's going to be missed communication, but fixed communication in your earthly relationships and in your heavenly relationships. Here's number three. Number three is that preparation is pivotal. Preparation is pivotal. You know, I can promise you that neither team playing tonight, the Bengals nor the Rams, just took the last 2 weeks off and are just planning on showing up tonight and just hoping for the best. No, that has not been happening. These guys have been practicing. You know, it's interesting that they've been practicing or they've been preparing, even though they are not exactly sure what their opponent is going to do. They don't know exactly what's going to happen on that field because why? The other team is doing the same. They are creating a strategy. They are creating a game plan. They are doing it, and they don't know exactly what's going to happen, but they are preparing anyway. Why? Because it's not about perfection. It's about preparation. It's not about perfection. It's not about having a perfect plan. And sometimes we get stuck because we want a perfect plan, but there is no such thing as a perfect plan. There is only preparation, because just the same way it is impossible for one of the teams to know what the other team is going to do tonight, guess what? It's impossible for you to know everything that you're going to encounter in life. There's not going to be a perfect plan, but we should still all be preparing. Because many times, it's actually what we learn in the process of preparation that prepares us the most. It's the process of preparation. It's the reading of the books. It's the listening to the podcast. It's the going to counseling. It's the attending church. It's showing up on Wednesday to Bible class. It's doing all of these things, engaging in a Grow You class. It's putting yourself in the environment of learning so that we can break the mold that's out there outside. The mold that's out there is entertain me. What we should be saying is educate me, right? It's got to be education over entertainment. Why? Because there's going to be something coming in my future that entertains. Entertainment is not going to prepare me for. I've got to be educated. I've got to be ready whenever it happens. And I'm not saying like you can't watch a movie and have a good time, but we can't live our life craving entertainment. We've got to be craving knowledge and education and wisdom. Even in the moments where we say, well, but everything's good in my life right now, but you don't know when the next adversity is going to show up. I love the quote from John Wooden, the great basketball coach at UCLA. He says, when opportunity comes, it's too late to prepare. When opportunity comes, it's too late to prepare. We could take out opportunity and say adversity. When adversity comes, it's too late to prepare. Jesus kind of told the same thing in a story one time, and he says, the storm's going to come, and when the storm comes and the water rises, there's going to be people that built their house on a firm foundation, and it's going to last. There's going to be people that did not build their house on that foundation, and everything they have is going to be whisked away. Why? Because there was a moment to prepare for the storm, and they didn't do the preparation needed. And so whenever the adversity showed up, the adversity overwhelmed them and overcame them instead of them being prepared for that adversity. Preparation is pivotal. Practice is vital. You know, there's a few things that happen in practice. The first thing that happens in practice is that practice exposes your weaknesses. That's why most people hate practice. That's why most people hate preparation. Because whenever you are encountering right? Like the better way to be, the better way to live. Whenever you are encountering what is possible, whenever you are beginning to discover the fullness of your potential and you start to realize like, my God, I'm so far away from where I want to be or where I could be. In that moment, all that is happening is you are exposing your flaws. You are exposing your weaknesses. You are exposing the distance away from who you want to be. And this is why most people don't go through a growth cycle, is because it exposes their weaknesses and the distance between where they are now and where they want to be, and that gets so uncomfortable and it gets so discouraging that they quit right there. But that's what practice is for. It's there to expose your weakness. That's why, as an athlete, you practice all week long, because you're exposing weakness, exposing weakness, exposing weakness. So what? So I can strengthen that weakness, so that weakness doesn't cost me on game day when it really matters. So practice, it exposes weakness, but you know what also it does? It expands strengths. The more you practice what you should be doing, the more you practice, guess what? It gets stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, and it grows and it grows. So as you're exposing weaknesses, you're also expanding your strengths. But you know what practice also does? It elevates your confidence. Because as I practice and I start doing it right, as I start off the week on Monday and I'm not doing it right, and my coach is correcting me and I'm not doing it right, and my coach is correcting me, and then Tuesday it's a little bit better, and Wednesday it's a little bit better, and I've been practicing these other things that are in my strength zone, and I've been getting stronger and stronger and stronger. What's been happening all week long in practice is that my confidence is elevating, so whenever I step out on the field of competition, my confidence is as high as possible. That happens in practice. And then if all those things happen, you've exposed your weaknesses, you've expanded your strengths, you've elevated your confidence, then guess what you do? You enhance your chance. You enhance your chance of actually winning. So what we're saying about life is that I want to run to win. That's what the Apostle Paul told us. So what is that going to mean? That means I've got to prepare, which means what? I've got to practice, which means my weaknesses are going to be exposed. I'm going to have to admit I didn't do that right. I'm going to have to admit I'm a long way off. I'm going to have to admit that there's some mistakes and there's some failures, that there's some gaps in my life. I'm going to have to admit it's going to be exposed. I've got to admit it. And then I've got to keep working on these strengths. I've got to keep building. And as I do that, I'm going to elevate my confidence. And then I'm going to enhance my chance of actually running this race the way that God created me to run it. So while Paul wrote to the church in Philippi, in Philippians chapter 2, and he says, work hard to show the results of your salvation. Work hard to show the results of your salvation, obeying God with deep reverence and fear. You see, work hard. You got to work hard now. You've got to work hard now. The result might not be seen for some time, but you have to work hard now. You plow the field now. You don't see the fruit today the same day you plow the field. No, you plow the field. You plant the seed. You water the soil. And then all of a sudden, over time, so you might not see the result, but guess what? When you work, you got to work now. Don't wait until adversity. Don't wait until trial and trouble. Don't wait until challenges arise. No, do the work you need to do now. That is called preparation. So whenever the adversity shows up and knocks on your door, you are ready for it. Even though it might not be exactly what you thought it was going to be. You watch golf, man, these guys hit just crazy shots. I mean, just crazy. Round trees and through the rough, you know. I mean, it's just like, wow. I mean, these tennis players are like running, right? You know, they run, like ball goes behind them. They smack it behind their back, right? We watch that and what were we like? We're like, God, it's so lucky. I mean, these guys are good, but they're lucky. Man, that guy would wrap his three-root around your throat if he heard you say that. There's no way. No, they might not known that exact situation was going to show up, but you know what? They've been preparing for that moment. They might have never hit that exact shot because they didn't know exactly what it was going to be, but they've hit so many shots. What? In preparation. They were ready for that moment. They were prepared for that moment. And this is what athletics teaches us about life, is when that moment comes up, you need to be ready. Preparation is pivotal. And it leads us to the last lesson, and that is that endurance is essential. Endurance is essential. Tonight, the game is four quarters long. It's going to be 60 minutes. And you have to be able to endure to the end to win. Endurance. It's just endurance. You know, years ago, I was coaching, and we had a nationally televised game with one of the top 10 teams in the country from Minnesota had flown down to play Creighton-Durham Hall. And they had flown down to play here in Louisiana, and it was an early October game. But come on, how many know in Louisiana, early October, it can still be 93 at 7 p.m., right? Yep. Okay, whenever I tell you that these boys weren't ready, these boys weren't ready. I mean, they were bigger. They were stronger. I mean, they had an unbelievable team. They had won like 3 or 4 state championships in a row. They had lost like 2 games in the last 4 years. I mean, they were a formidable foe until that Louisiana humidity hit them. And they went from a formidable foe to folding like a one-egg pudding. I mean, those guys didn't make it to halftime. And it wasn't because they had less talent or less potential or less skill. They had everything they needed to win the game except one thing, endurance. Endurance, because for us, that was a cool night. Because we had practiced through June and July. We had practiced in August and in September. We had had the 100-plus degree heat. So for us, a 91-degree kickoff in October, man, this is like a day off. The coach actually told us after the game, he said, I don't think some of my boys have ever felt this in their lifetime. And it was just a matter of endurance. You know, sometimes our journey of faith, it's not about what we know. It's not even about what is possible. It's not about how long we've been in church. Sometimes it's just a matter of endurance. Sometimes it's just a matter of your ability to continue in strength, just to outlast the adversity. Can you just outlast the adversity? Can you just get through what it is that you are going through? The Bible speaks of this in James chapter 1. We looked at this just a few weeks ago, but this is what James, the brother of Jesus, says. He says, consider it nothing but joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you fall into various trials. Be assured that the testing of your faith through experience, so you need to know, the testing of your faith, it happens through real physical experiences that we have. That through the testing of your faith, that produces endurance, leading to spiritual maturity and inner peace. And let endurance have its perfect result and do a thorough work so that you may be perfect and completely developed in your faith, lacking in nothing. Here's what I can tell you about life. There are going to be trials. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be setbacks. I can promise you that with all certainty today. There's going to be situations and circumstances that are beyond your control. And then you have a choice. You have a choice to let that trial either develop you or destroy you. You have a decision to make in the midst of your difficulty. Am I going to let this difficulty develop something on the inside of me? Or am I going to let it destroy me? And what James is challenging us, he says, hey, what you need to do in those moments is you need to let your endurance grow. You need to let it grow so that it will be what you need it to be in the future. Okay, watch this. You need to let it grow so it will be what you need it to be in the future. So it will be mature, so it will be complete, so you'll be lacking nothing. That team from Minnesota that flew down, and I'm sure it was 51 degrees and high in October in Minnesota, flies down here, it's 91 degrees at kickoff. We have the advantage because we have the endurance, so we end up winning like 48-7. But what if we would have just stayed inside playing Xbox all summer long? What if we would have showed up in August and said, man, it's just too hot. Let's just sit inside and let's just watch film. When we would have gotten out on the field, there would have been no advantage. Our advantage was in the fact that we had endured the heat of the summer. We had endured the discomfort of August. We had made it through all the things that were uncomfortable day after day after day. So whenever we showed up early in October on national television against one of the greatest teams in the country, we whipped them. Why? Because of endurance that we had developed throughout the process. This is why when you get into one trial, you've got to let it develop you, because if it doesn't develop you, you're going to step into the next trial and you're not going to be mature and complete, able to handle the next trial that you face. So James writes and he says, hey, when you get to the trial, you got to consider it joy, because there's something in this trial that's going to help you grow and develop. You see, you should always grow through whatever it is that you go through. No adversity wasted. No trial wished away. But isn't this what we do? Oh God, I just hope this goes away. Oh God, I just can't wait till this is over. Oh God, I hope it's something different tomorrow. And we waste the adversity. And we wish away our opportunity. Our opportunity to grow through what we go through. Now, if you take all four of these things and you kind of put them together as we wrap up today, those trials that we're talking about, those challenges, those things that are helping you develop endurance, those things could be seen as preparation. They're trials and challenges. They are helping you prepare for what is to come. And during that preparation, guess what you need? You need good communication. You better be talking to God in your trials, because if you're not talking to him in your trials, guess what? You're only going to be talking to yourself, and you are going to mess yourself up. And that communication with God, you know where that's really coming from? It's really coming from the vision you have about God and about your future and about what's possible. And you got to be able to have that vision, whether you can see it or not. You got to see without seeing. You got to be able to envision what God said was possible, even when you are surrounded by things that are contrary to what God said you could see. You got to begin to see. You've got to have a vision. So we see all of these things working together. That my vision is so vital, because my vision is creating the God that I serve. And that God that I serve is going to be the God that I talk to and that I communicate with. And as I begin to communicate with him, I'm going to be preparing for what it is that I'm going to encounter. And whenever I encounter this thing, I'm going to have endurance to make it through it. And all of these things are working together. What are they working together for you for? So that you can run the race and win. Because without vision, you don't win. Without communication, you don't win. Without preparation, you don't win. Without endurance, you don't win. So Paul brings it all together for us. He says, hey, you want to run to win? That means you got to run with purpose in every single step you take. Vision, communication, preparation, and endurance. Are we closing all of our services in 2022 because we want to advance? And what does that mean? That means we got to really lead ourselves well. And so I want to leave you with these thoughts today, a little acrostic. What are we learning, evaluating, applying, and then doing again? And what are we learning? What we learned today is that vision, communication, preparation, and endurance are all important in my faith journey. If I'm going to run to win, I've got to have these things. My evaluation then becomes this. Do I have a vision that creates communication, promotes preparation, and encourages endurance? Do I have a vision? Do you have a vision for what's possible? Do you have a vision for the promises of God? Do you have a vision for the power of God working in you? Do you have a vision for what God declared was possible in your life? Do you have a vision for that? Because it's going to be out of that vision that creates your communication. And that communication is going to promote that preparation. And that preparation is going to lead you into encourage you into endurance. And then the applies this, hey, run to win. Run with purpose in every step. Run with purpose in every step. And we've already said, this is what it looks like. Vision, communication, preparation, and endurance. And then the D is always the same. Just do it again.
Thank you for listening. To hear more messages like this one, make sure to subscribe and share our podcast. For more content from NCC and how to get connected, visit ncc.team.